You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill, and once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist lobby, also the bisexual, transgender. There's all sorts of new and odd contortions to the movement. It all falls under the rubric of GLBT. And we're on the other side, and we're giving an alternative. You see a lot of homosexuality promotion in the media, et cetera. And I'm excited today to have back interviewing a good friend, Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance. Brian, are you there?
Yep, I'm here, Pete.
We've interviewed Brian before. You can see it on our you can listen to the program on the archive. Just go to AmericansForTruth.org and hit the Americans for Truth Hour button on the right. Brian is one of our earlier interviews. But Brian, we wanted you back today because you were intricately involved in the big victory that happened in Maryland recently, in which a same-sex so-called marriage, same-sex marriage bill was rejected by the people in a sort of surprise. The homosexual activists thought they had this thing in the bag, and you were a big part of helping the opposition in the defeat of this radical legislation. And I should say that this interview is being pre-taped on March 16th, and it's airing on March 19th. So just in case it is not live, as most of our interviews aren't. But Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pete. Great to be here.
Well, yeah, and our listeners and people familiar with Americans for Truth will know you. Mass Resistance is one of the most effective pro-family organizations on the homosexual issue. I think there is no organization that chronicles the radical activities of the homosexual movement as yours. And I encourage listeners to go to massresistance.org. Brian is very good at what he does. He catches a lot of flack for it. But you've experienced so-called gay marriage there and the effects of it and homosexual activist laws in Massachusetts, which is why people come to you when they want to know what they can do to stop it from happening in their state. Right, Brian?
That's right, Pete. An article that I wrote just before the Prop 8 vote, what homosexual marriage did to Massachusetts, was used extensively in the Maryland issue, as well as in other states, not only California, but Hawaii, in New Hampshire, Maine, Florida, Iowa, and other states. So, we've seen it firsthand here, that's for sure.
Now, why don't you, and folks, again, Mass Resistance, Brian Kammacher, and Brian and I have worked together for a long time. He's just, you really are a gem to the movement, Brian, and I believe that you should be one of the people leading this opposition to same-sex marriage. You talk about, and we're going to get into in your article, what usually happens is the so-called moderates get in there, and their strategy is don't talk about homosexuality, right?
Yeah, that's unfortunately, what happens is, that's exactly right, is, you know, the big pro-family groups, the moderate pro-family groups, start and form a coalition. And they, you know, their strategy is to have one, you know, unified message and have it not be anti-gay so that people, you know, don't think that they're hateful people or what have you. And, you know, that have it be a positive message and, you know, every child needs a mother and a father and all of that. And it's very compelling, but it's almost completely ineffective. It doesn't work. And you know, that's what I I told the people in Maryland.
Does it steal the emotion away from our side? Because let's name names. I mean, these are one group is the National Organization for Marriage. It has done a lot of wonderful work, but unfortunately, I think they are the ones right now leading this in this process of dictating that a softer, more acceptable message. And I'm very distressed, and I'm not sure if they officially say this, but I'm very distressed to see this idea that you do not make homosexuality, you don't criticize homosexuality on a principled, in a principled way, because of course that's what the whole homosexual marriage is, just part of the larger homosexual activist movement.
Right. Well, in Maryland, the National Organization for Marriage did not take that approach. I mean, in other words, they weren't part of this big coalition. What they did was they basically put money into things like robocalls to get people to call their elected officials, their senators and delegates, which is their version of state reps. So in Maryland, you know, they basically had a pretty narrow role, but very effective. I think they put something like $200,000 into that, and they also made this sort of open threat to fund $1 million against, pro-homosexual Republicans. But nevertheless, it was I don't know if you want to say the Dobson-type groups. I can't say that for sure. But, these moderate, pro-family groups that immediately came and tried to, and actually did form a coalition, gave the orders, we're going to decide what the message is, we're going to decide who testifies, and as I said, Pete, it doesn't work. Nobody buys it. What you need is emotion.
Well, let me back up a little bit, because I do want to be accurate, and we are Americans for Truth. NOM, National Organization for Marriage, has done tremendous work. However, they have been part of similar types of messaging in the past. I think they played more of that role in Maine. And, for example, didn't in Maine, am I correct in saying that we saw sort of a message that even sort of tried to nuance it on civil unions? In the pro-marriage campaign,
I think it was more like that in Maine. Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
Well, and the point is,
after a while,
and when you say Dobson, well, of course, you're talking Focus on the Family affiliated organizations. Dobson's no longer part of Focus on the Family.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
he's retired.
But you're saying that some of the more established sort of groups get in there and say, look, certain things are off the table. You're not going to talk about this. And you came right in, and you said, don't listen to those guys.
Yeah, and just to back up a little bit, that's what happened in Massachusetts. And I believe that that's the reason that we had this huge loss in the legislature when it came to the vote on homosexual marriage, is because they very tightly controlled them, what was said. And even at rallies, they controlled what kind of signs you could hold up. And it was just a complete and utter failure.
And so you have this sort of suffocating political correctness,
right,
even on our side.
Yeah. And see, what ends up winning is when people can be creative and say what's on their mind and say the truth as it is to them. Some people will, say, yeah, every child needs a mother and a father. Some people will say homosexuality is a destructive and disordered behavior. Some people will say it's immoral. Some people will quote the Bible. People will have a whole diverse range of issues that they'll bring to the table, and they're all good. They're all legitimate. That's what we find. We find that the average person on the pro-family side is a lot smarter and more insightful than the leadership often thinks they are, and a lot more effective.
Now let's back up. I kind of raced ahead with this thing because I was excited. I read your paper, the top 10 reasons why Maryland was won, and we want to get into that further. But let's back up. Talk about how this whole what happened in the struggle in Maryland and how you got involved.
Well, we got a phone call at the office from some activists there. And, you know, they said, you know, they'd seen our stuff, they'd seen our materials, and they wanted us to help. And they were distressed at being told by this coalition that they had to muzzle their message. And they thought that that's what you had to do, but it still made them very uncomfortable. And so they wanted us to weigh in on it and give them any help that we could. So what we did was they had sort of a group called Protect Marriage Maryland. And so we had we started off with a conference call with as many of their people across the state as we could get, and we talked about it. And I basically told them, I said, you need to completely disregard that advice because it won't work. And they were so, they felt, they were so sort of thankful to hear that.
Now, how many people were part of this conference call?
I don't know for sure. Maybe a dozen or so to start with. It might have been more.
And so you basically told them, be yourselves and fight this thing.
Well, I said, yeah, I said, you know, you can't give these sort of sterile, messages because the other side isn't going to buy it because we don't even buy it. I mean, yeah, every child needs a mother and a father, but it's not compelling enough, a compelling enough argument. And I said, no, you have to come in with what's comfortable for you and what you believe is the truth. And boy, did they ever.
Okay. Well, we're coming up to a break. I'm talking to Brian Kammacher of Mass Resistance. His website is massresistance.org. And, Brian, we've said if civil unions is an acceptable compromise, well, then, hey, why don't we just let them get married? So we're going to talk about the sort of compromising messages, the political correctness within the pro-family movement. I'm Pete LaBarber with Americans for Truth, americansfortruth.org. We'll be right back. Everybody, I'm Pete LaBarber with the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm talking to my good friend Brian Kammacher of MassResistance.org. Brian is one of the top pro-family advocates on the homosexuality issue in the entire world, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. He has sacrificed a ton to tell the truth. He got sued by homosexual activists. He's been through it all. You can learn more at MassResistance.org. Before I start talking again with Brian, I want to say that we have our Truth Academy in Columbus, our second Americans for Truth Academy. We're doing it co-sponsored with Mission America. It's called The Hate Labeling of Christians and What You Can Do About It. And that information is at americansfortruth.org. There's a big button for the Truth Academy. That's April 1st and 2nd in Columbus, Ohio. April 1st and 2nd. It's $75 if you pay by within the next week or so or a couple weeks. And then it's $100 at the door, but you really will learn a lot of these. And we hope to have Brian Kammacher be a lecturer at one of our future Truth Academies. Brian, would you be up for that at some point?
Sure. Sure, yeah.
The only problem is you're a little soft on homosexuality.
Maybe you could have me on somewhere where I can't cause too much damage.
Okay, so now, let's go back to this, your article, and you were instrumental in the victory over a same-sex marriage bill. And Brian, give me the name of the bill, because this is a funny one. Wasn't the bill named the Religious Freedom Protection and Gay Marriage and Marriage Protection Act, something like that? They actually implied that they were going to protect religious freedom.
Yeah, I mean, what they did is, it was sort of comical. The bill had, a large part of the bill was this clause saying that churches wouldn't have to perform these gay marriages. They went into this great detail on, we're going to have them, but churches won't have to do it. And so that's why they called it a religious freedom thing. And it was this finessing thing. So, well, it's really about religious freedom. Well, nobody bought that. I mean, it was sort of like pretty ludicrous.
Well, but let's be honest. We know what the homosexual side's doing. They've done polling. They know. They understand that the threat to religious freedom is now one of the core arguments against their agenda.
Right.
And so they're putting out this fake thing. They did the same thing in Illinois. The civil unions bill was called the Religious Freedom. Right. It also had a religious freedom name. This is a spin by the homosexual side, but they have a big problem because they really don't want to protect our religious freedom. This had a very tightly written so-called protection, didn't it? It wasn't very comprehensive.
Well, I mean, it did. I mean, the truth is that in Massachusetts, nobody is forced to do that. You know, churches right. aren't forced to. So, number one, the threat wasn't really there. But number two, the churches. I mean, I think most people didn't really read the bill carefully. They just knew it was a gay marriage bill.
Right.
So they could have written anything in it, and it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, the churches came out, as it turned out, after sort of a slow start. They came out in full force. And, the fact that the bill said that, you know, what it said, I think most people didn't even read it. You know, they just knew what it was. So it didn't work. And
now, was this bill, the homosexual side, they were very, very confident that they would, that this was going to pass. And they really want to pass so-called gay marriage by a vote. They don't want it pushed in by the courts. They want to pass it by a vote. But they were pretty cocky, weren't they?
Oh, they were incredibly cocky. Because here's what happened is the big, you know, in everybody's eyes, the big... the thing in the way was the state Senate, because it was the most conservative, and the Senate was sort of on the edge of going one way or the other, and so the homosexuals really put everything into getting it through the Senate. I mean, they just hammered those guys, and they came to the Senate hearing, and they did everything in the world. And by the time it got to the House, after the Senate, the House had its own hearing. The House was it looked like it was going to just whip through the House with no problem at all. So they didn't even really bother much with the House hearing or the House anything, because it looked like it was going to sail through. Well, guess what? That's when everybody got involved. That's when the churches got involved. And it was like a flood, like a tsunami. I mean, you know, they came to that House hearing, and I'll tell you something else is the leadership of our side was even given up on the House. You know, the meetings that came before that, and I even have the emails, were, you know, yeah, it's going to go to the House, but what we're going to do is we're really preparing for the petition drive afterwards.
Now, is this the leadership of the kind of the coalition you were talking
about?
Yeah,
the coalition. The coalition, you know, sent out the word that, you know, yeah, it's going to go through the House, but, you know, let's start getting ready for the petition drive.
And that would be like a veto, a sort of a people's veto, like in Massachusetts or in Maine?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
But the pro-family groups did the opposite. They geared up. They came full force, and they brought in the ex-gays, which was really, really incredible. I mean, Anthony Falzerano and what's his name from New Jersey?
Greg Quinlan. Who we interviewed on the show, yeah.
Greg Quinlan, and it was really good. And we have their videos on our website. And they just came in with full force, and the churches got involved, and everything got involved. And there were robocalls, and the other thing which they had, Pete, was that there were pro-family legislators in the House that really got involved. I mean, there was one or two of these guys. Like, there's a guy named Delegate Don Dwyer who was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, he steered that thing, and usually it's the gay side that does that.
We hope to have Delegate Dwyer on the show, and he is to be commended for the work he did. But
oh man!
And you said the Republicans. I want you to talk about what Delegate Dwyer, but also the Republicans did not pull away. I mean, we face this thing nationally where the Republicans don't seem to think that homosexuality is an issue worth fighting for anymore.
Well, yeah, this is another thing. In Massachusetts, the Republicans are basically on the other side of the issue, but there they were hardcore. I mean, the Speaker of the Senate, or the Senate President, the Republican, I guess, no, the Republican minority leader in the Senate, was forced to resign when he said that he could support civil unions. I mean, that's how tight those guys are. And what happened was they didn't let any. I guess one senator went the other way, but they didn't let any Republicans out of sight on this issue. I mean, you know, they were really tight on that, and they also supported. I guess the Republicans did some robocalls. They also helped out, so the party was there, and that was really good because as you've seen in Illinois and as I've seen in Massachusetts and if what's going on right now in New Hampshire, the Republicans get cold feet and not there. It was just really good.
Well, I think a classic example nationally on the federal level is where are the Republicans in repealing the repeal on the ban on homosexuals in the military?
Yeah, I know.
Where is it? I mean, come on. That was the issue that devastated Bill Clinton's presidency, if you remember. Now, all of a sudden, oh, it's a done deal. And yep. And the word is that the Pentagon is rushing implementation of this to be able to say to the president that to certify this for Obama to sign it. Where are the Republicans, Brian? I mean, that's a whole other issue, but it's symbolic.
Yeah, you're right. And they I've participated in some conference calls, as you have, and they don't seem interested in this issue as much as they need to be. You know, they sort of want to move on to more interesting things like taxes, you know. But so that was a big deal. The churches getting involved was huge because I'll tell you, during the Senate thing, everybody was going around saying, where are the churches? You know, I mean, you'd have these black legislators who had hardcore anti-gay marriage districts, and the churches were just sort of sitting on their hands. Well, what happened was when it got to the House, those guys just, a fire lit under them. And a number of these, pro-gay marriage legislators, particularly some of the black ones, switched. They'd even been co-sponsors of the bill. There was one guy, who said, oh, man, I didn't realize that it was a gay marriage bill. I thought it was a civil unions bill. and there was one woman who had been a co-sponsor who told the press, she said, I support it, but my district doesn't. So I have to vote against it.
Well, let me read something from your paper. We got a minute 43 to the break. You said one lesson that was reinforced throughout this experience was that legislators are capable of believing the most outrageous lies and propaganda and will act accordingly unless passionately confronted by constituents.
That is a universal law. that's something that really continues to surprise me, Pete, is the complete nonsense and idiocy that these guys will believe. You know, I mean, some of these arguments for the gay marriage side were just so stupid. The civil rights argument, for instance, how can anybody believe this nonsense? And they were just marching right in step, and the cold water of anger from their from their constituents. Boy, had an effect.
Yeah, you said watching Bible-believing legislators repeat the ridiculous, quote, civil rights platitudes from the homosexual lobby was unbelievable. So they're being deluged with propaganda.
Yeah, there was one guy in the Washington Post, one of the legislators, who said, yes, I'm a church-going, Bible-believing Christian, he said, but I'm not going to let my religion interfere with my vote for civil rights.
I'm not going to let my Christianity interfere with my pursuit of an evil agenda. Oh, brother. We're talking to Brian Kammacher of Mass Resistance. Massresistance.org is his website. Brian is a stalwart in the fight, and he helped out in a huge victory over so-called gay marriage in Maryland. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera of Americans for Truth. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. We have the Truth Academy coming up, a 1.5 day, April 1st and 2nd in Columbus. We're co-sponsoring that with Mission America. Has some wonderful speakers. Professor Rob Gagnon is the world's leading authority on the Bible and homosexuality. Greg Quinlan, who Brian just referenced, an ex-gay. Just wonderful speakers. So go to our website, AmericansForTruth.org, and sign up for that Truth Academy, because you will come out confident and learn it enough to really take on this agenda. But Brian, back to the legislature, and talk to Brian Kammacher here. What is it about legislators that they need to be shored up? So how come so few legislators don't take the lead? And I want you to talk more about what Delegate Dwyer did, why he was so effective.
Well, you know, I don't know what there is when you get into power, but it's a very corrupting kind of environment. You want to be liked. You want to get along with people. You don't want the liberals to hate you. And there's a tendency to believe just complete nonsense. And it's not just on this issue. I mean, when a lot of the stuff that's passed, you know, a lot of the stuff that's budgeted public money for, you know, just ridiculous reasons that they're given for doing it. And, you know, when you see it and hear it and talk to these guys, you know, you scratch your head and you say, how can anybody believe this stuff? And so it's not just this issue. It's across the board. And that's why so much stupid things happen in legislators, with legislatures. And
Well, let me read this on Dwyer, and then I want you to comment. In your piece, it's called Maryland's Pro-Family Victory Analysis, Top 10 Reasons Why It Was Won When It Looked Like It Would Lose. Again, this is the battle for so-called same-sex marriage in Maryland, which was turned back by the people. You cite point number 4, outstanding leadership from politicians. A few politicians really stepped up to the plate. In particular, Delegate Don Dwyer really took ownership of the lobbying effort in the House and worked closely with activists. Delegate Dwyer was the pulse of where people were, what was happening, and what and who was doing it in the House. And you said people said he was an amazing leader. So tell me about him.
People couldn't say enough about him. He was the face of this, and they wish they'd had a guy like him in the Senate. He knew who was on the line. You know, who was on the fence at any time. You know, who needed to get calls, who didn't need to get calls. You know, how everybody felt. What anybody should be doing at any time, you could go to him, and he really took leadership on this thing, and he was passionate about it, and he was intelligent, and as I said, he knew that place and knew where everybody was, and what it took to get them over the line, and again, this is something that the other side usually does. Now, we rarely, if ever, have somebody like that on our side, and it was just amazing. I mean,
and it shows you what the potential is if we had more people like that. Republicans tend to be on our side in this issue, but like we said, there's a political correctness that is creeping and growing very rapidly within Republican circles and especially conservative circles with the rise of libertarians. But that's gratifying. And I do want to say again, I referenced the National Organization for Marriage. We've criticized before they're sort of pushing this moderate strategy. But in this battle, your point was number 7. You said money was put to good use. The National Organization for Marriage, NOM, paid for hundreds of thousands of robocalls across the state, informing and mobilizing voters in key districts, which were very effective. It was also reported in the press that NOM was willing to give up to $1 million to defeat pro-gay marriage Republicans across the country who favor same-sex marriage. Yeah. So I just want to be clear. Yeah. There's a role for NOM has a strategy. They try not to appear anti-gay. And nobody likes that phrase, anti-gay, as if you're opposed to people. We oppose homosexual behavior. But I believe, and I think you share the belief, Brian, that there needs to be almost a you know, that's part of the picture. But there needs to be the guys, like you said, the people in pitchforks who are fighting this based on, and obviously homosexuality is the main issue in this debate. It's not something to be ignored.
Right. And I think that's what won, is by people not being afraid to tell the truth about homosexuality, about the ex-gay movement, about what's going to happen in the schools, and they just did it. Now, I think what Nam really was prepared for was to lead the referendum, should this thing lose, or should it be passed. And when that looked like it wasn't going to happen, that there was a chance of actually our winning, what they did was, you know, a reasonable thing. It was, you know, doing these robocalls to get people to do the legislature, you know, and to help them, you know, educate people. And I think they did some other stuff, but it had, you know, it was sort of neutral as to the message. It was, here's who you should call, and better call now, kind of thing. And now, had it gone to a petition drive, who knows what would have happened then?
Well, we saw that in Maine. We saw the push of a moderate. We saw Mike Heath pushed out. Mike Heath was the pro-family veteran in Maine who was the leader, the most effective leader in the state fighting the homosexual activist agenda. And he was pushed out of the referendum drive against same-sex marriage in Maine.
Right, and it was, you know, it was that, you know, what was his name, the Jeremiah Project Group and all of that.
Bob Emmerich.
With them, yeah. And it was, yeah, that was a very sad thing. And that, you know.
That goes to your point.
Yeah, and because what happened is at the last minute in Maine, they ended up using our strategy. You know, when it looked like it was coming down to the wire, suddenly they let all the big guns go. You know,
Brian, I got a question for you. I think I have a hypothesis. I want you to hear what you think. I think we could have won by a bigger margin on Prop 8 in California had there been more of your strategy and less of the moderate strategy. Do you think that's what do you think about it? They won by what, 50 something? It was closer.
It was close, yeah. And a lot of it was because the blacks came out to vote for Obama and they voted for Prop 8 because the black community really hated gay marriage. And in, you know, so that had, according to a lot of people I've talked to, a big help with that. But I think you're right.
I mean, we're told that this is what we have to do to win.
Yeah.
You have to go moderate. You have to de-emphasize homosexuality. And what you're saying is that's the whole reason we didn't win. We beat back gay marriage in Maryland.
Well, that's the reason it lost in Massachusetts. You know, that's the reason we couldn't win in the legislature was 100% because of that. Because the group that was controlling things controlled the message. And, you know, then there was Mitt Romney and all of that who was talking about respect for everybody. And the thing is that if homosexuality is not destructive, then why not let them get married? You know, I mean, there's no logical reason. And I think people realize that if it's only that, you know, it'd be nice if kids had a mother and a father, and we all think they should. That's not a compelling enough reason. And it's always going to lose. The gays love it.
The gays love it when we do that. Yeah, they love it. And then they push even harder.
Yeah.
And it seems like our side, you know, is always pulling back. And it's so neat to see that the truth had a huge impact in Maryland. And tell us more about your article on Massachusetts, that was widely disseminated.
Oh, yeah. It was, according to people I talked to. You know, I mean, I don't want to say that we were the reason that it won, but, I, you know, we helped a lot, and we encouraged people to copy that, and what they told us was that they copied it, and they passed it out everywhere. And
this was the article, what gay marriage did to Massachusetts, what homosexual marriage did to Massachusetts.
And the other thing was the David Parker case. I mean, that was actually debated on the floor of the House.
Give the one-minute summary of that.
David Parker was a father of a kindergartner, and the school insisted on teaching him about homosexuality and transgenderism without the father's knowledge or consent. He took it to federal court, and the federal court judge said, because of gay marriage, you don't have any rights, that the school not only can do it, but should do it. And that was incredible.
So gay marriage essentially, and that happened in Massachusetts, gay marriage essentially forces the affirmation of homosexuality to young people in schools.
Absolutely, yeah. And we flooded the place with David Parker material, and that apparently had a had an impact. It was debated, and you know, and the gay activists really don't have an answer for that. You know, I mean, federal judge is a federal judge.
Well, the sneaky little truth is that homosexual activists aren't very outspoken when it comes to the repression of religious freedom.
Yeah.
It's their cases that are in the vanguard now of threatening religious freedom. And you don't see many top homosexual activists saying, yeah, this is wrong. People should have the right to oppose homosexuality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They don't say that. And so that, you know, that had and, you know, people just doing whatever they felt was the truth. And, you know, it was just wonderful. You know, it was really, really effective. And I guess that's how we fight it.
Now you was the Boston Catholic Charities case with homosexual adoption. Was that a factor? What happened there?
No, it wasn't. We didn't push that because, in fact, it's been sort of misrepresented.
Okay, explain that. We got a minute. We may have to carry over to the break.
Okay. It's been misrepresented because it really wasn't forced. I mean, it wasn't a state law that about anti-discrimination. It was an administrative rule which the governor at any time could have changed. And
that was Governor Romney.
Yeah, I mean, even Michael Dukakis weighed in on that one. He said, "Yeah, I don't understand why Romney didn't just change the rule."
And so Mitt Romney could have made the change that wouldn't have forced Catholic Charities to open to open up to gay adoption?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing was Romney filed a bill in the legislature to repeal the law which was holding that back. But the trouble is there was no law. And if you read the law that he filed, it was nothing. It was just this fluff. It didn't repeal anything.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Mitt Romney next. We're talking to Brian Kamiker of Mass Resistance. He provided a lot of assistance to the people in Maryland in their successful bid to stop homosexual marriage. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Pete LaBarbera with the Americans for Truth Hour, and we are in our final segment with Brian Kamiker of Mass Resistance. His website is massresistance.org. Brian, so... what about the role of black pastors in this whole thing in Maryland? I know we had Bishop Harry Jackson was big time involved. Who was that a huge role? Played a big part in the defeat.
It played a huge part. You know, and as I said before, it looked like they were just going to sit back because during the Senate stuff, you know, Bishop Harry Jackson's church really wasn't doing much that we could see. You know, I mean, they certainly weren't going after their own pro-gay legislator, but after it went into the House, everybody just went on fire. I mean, and they were incredibly effective. I mean, really, really good. It just was like night and day.
Weren't there? I heard there were some legislators that switched their vote, and they were essentially told, "Look, you're going to be out of office if you don't."
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it was just amazing. You know, and the black churches in the House were just really effective.
Now, you said the ex-gay movement had a – explain why that was such an important role, because I believe that in some of these marriage fights, some groups don't want the ex-gays involved at all because, again, they say, well, it's not about homosexuality. It's just about gay marriage. So why was that so important?
Well, because a large premise of their argument is that you're born that way. And somehow that translates into civil rights and all of this other stuff. And if you can break that argument, because it's a false argument, you're not born that way, and do it intelligently and passionately and believably, it's very, very powerful. And those two guys, among others, came and it was like just a dam breaking, you know. They were very good, and that message needs to be part of every fight like this. It just needs to be.
So you cannot divorce homosexuality from the entire rest of the debate that we're seeing, whether it's civil unions, homosexual so-called marriage, whatever the issue is, homosexuality is the main part of it. How do we get to the point where it was divorced?
I think that people are just afraid of it. You know, they'd rather not deal with it. That's the problem. But I mean, ultimately, Pete, if homosexuality is not dangerous and depraved or whatever, then why not let them get married? Then why not teach it in the schools? You know, there's no logical reason. You know, just because you don't happen to like it isn't a good reason. The problem is that it is all of these things. It is a very destructive and self-destructive lifestyle. And, you know, it's immoral and everything else, destroys society, and that has to be brought out.
Right.
And if you don't bring it out, then what's the problem? You know, it simply doesn't work.
Yeah, and it creates a sort of a conflict in the minds and hearts of people who are our strongest backers. In other words,
right,
it confuses the grassroots, and that's what you say. There was a sense of relief when you said, "Hey, do away with that sort of political correctness. Talk about what you want to talk about."
Yeah, and you know, that's why these guys like Wayne Beeson and all of that are so passionate about trying to destroy the ex-gay movement, is because they know that's their Achilles heel, and the truth getting out is going to destroy much of their whole house of cards.
Absolutely, it's an idea that really damages them. And if it was such a non-issue, as they say, why do they spend so much effort denying it? And for every public ex-gay, here's something I think we need to keep saying. For every public ex-gay, there's, I don't know if it's 10,000, 1,000, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, but there's lots of people who've overcome homosexuality who never go public.
So this
idea that there's hardly any ex-gays is ridiculous.
I know lots and lots of them. And, you know, many of them would just as soon not talk about it. But it's like getting out of other, you know, kinds of addictions. You know, it's difficult. It takes a spiritual aspect. You know, it's a recovery process. You know, but it's possible. You know, Richard Cohen, I think, wanted to get involved. I think he had some other commitments and couldn't do it. He's an ex-gay who with I think he has a practice of psychology practice in that area.
Yes.
Well,
I was going to say, time's running short, Brian. Let's talk about the Republican Party. Now, you mentioned Romney, and of course, we're a non-political, we're a nonpartisan organization, but we're talking just about for both parties. But the Republican Party is the one that says it's against gay marriage and all this. It's actually against homosexual special rights legislation in the platform, I believe. But talk about the future of the Republican Party. There is a lot of libertarian pressure now for the Republicans to go neutral, or even go either neutral on homosexuality or start backing gay marriage. Michael Barone wrote a piece about upscale. You know, the Republicans could go upscale and be pro-gay. Talk about what the impact of that would be.
Well, you know, if 31 states voted on this and all 31 states voted one way, the Republican Party is becoming pro-gay at its own peril. You know, people are going to have to go somewhere, and they're not going to like it. I think it just isn't going to work. And I think, like the Tea Party movement, there's going to be a sort of a revolt among the grassroots and among just citizens if the Republican Party starts to do this.
Now, you guys, Mitt Romney was there's a lot of confusion about his record, but he's on the homosexual issue. He's pretty weak, isn't he?
Well, Amy Contrada in our office just wrote a book on Romney and gay rights. And, yeah, it was, yeah, I mean, it's enormous. I mean, Mitt Romney, even now on his website, brags about the gay judges that he appointed. He does not see homosexuality as any problem, and he said that over and over again. You know, it's tolerance and everything else, and that he just, you know, from time to time hasn't, wanted gay marriage. But the truth is that he was from the beginning very pro-homosexual. You know, he had major national homosexual figures on his transition team. He was endorsed by the Log Cabin Republicans when he ran for governor. He refused to sign the original anti-gay marriage petition in 2002. Not only did he refuse to sign it, but he tried to get his family name, his family's names off of it when they signed it. He has a long history of being pro-homosexual, going back to 1994 when he was debating Ted Kennedy and claimed that he would be more pro-gay than Ted Kennedy. So,
wow. You
know, and you know, he allowed the Governor's Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth to continue. He, even after we presented evidence of what they were doing, a lot of his departments became more pro-gay during his time. He signed a proclamation for Gay Youth Pride Day on at least two occasions.
And on it goes. Okay, we've got 1 minute left. Brian, tell us, are you bullish about the future of the pro-family movement on this issue? Everybody's talking about, oh, it's over, and a lot of people are discouraged. But how has this Maryland fight affected you?
Oh, I am bullish, yeah. I think it's just a matter of turning the corner on this. I think it's not really a movement. It's a counter-revolution. And we are fighting the revolution that these people are trying to inflict on America.
Literally a sexual revolution.
Something like that. Yeah. And, there have been times in history.
20 seconds, Brian.
When everything looked bad. Nobody ever thought that the Nazis would come out of power. Nobody thought the communists would come out of power. Nobody thought the civil rights movement would ever happen. This is not going to last.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for being our guest, and thank you for your work in Maryland. God bless everybody. Go to the website massresistance.org and check out americansfortruth.org as well.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.